Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the Newsbusters podcast, where things are getting back to normal here in January. We're back to the Jen Psaki briefing, and we're back to Joe Biden having no press conferences. This is what he does. Almost no interviews, almost no press conferences, because he knows he stinks at it. And the press doesn't care, which means he can have fewer of them. And they try to cover it up by having Jen Psaki briefings. So they're fighting on Twitter over the hashtag #BareshelvesBiden. People are sharing their pictures. I know my boy Ben and I went to the Harris Teeter supermarket looking for some taco essentials. And yeah, there was a lot of stuff missing. There was a lot of bare shelves. We're trying to find tortillas. We've got that old Mad TV thing. They're after my tortillas. That's because we can't find any. No distilled water. What is going on? So this is a real thing happening to real people in real supermarkets. But the liberals on Twitter just can't handle it. There was hot media news involving cable TV hosts. Fox finally announced somebody's going to get a full-time show at 7 p.m. What do we have? Like a year or more of a revolving door of hosts? Jesse Waters gets the slot. It also comes out that Simone Sanders has revolved from the Kamala Harris vice presidential sweatshop to getting a weekend show on MSNBC and some sort of show on Peacock. And what's funny about this, of course, is that the CNN media unit is going to rain fire on Fox for hiring Waters, and they're going to be kind of bored by Simone Sanders getting a show. Like, no big deal. You know, you can just have people revolve from Biden-Harris right into MSNBC, and that's fine. You know that's not the way they were when there's a revolving door from Trump into Fox. But that's different. Yes, Brian Stelter had this tweet about flamethrowers. That's Jesse Waters. He's a flamethrower at Fox. Now, remember, this is a guy who put somebody on his show who suggested Trump would kill more people than Stalin, Hitler, and Mao combined. By this point, Stelter's like, come on, you guys bring that up all the time. Yes, we do, because it shows you have no room to talk about somebody else cartooning the news or flamethrowing. Speaking of Stelter, have you noticed this evolution on COVID? First, Brian got a little more skeptical of the COVID consensus on the kiddos in schools. And now it's on the adults, too. Suddenly, it's become a terrible thing to drive people's COVID anxiety. This is terrible. Isn't that interesting? Yes, the year turns 2022. It's a midterm election year, and suddenly we think that COVID's being overdone. Does that sound suspicious to any of the rest of you? So, Stelter on his show, the reliably liberal, reliable sources, brought on a doctor named Lucy McBride. Well, she wrote an article for The Atlantic titled A COVID Serenity Prayer. You remember, we used to have this on a plaque in my house. Lord, let me accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Yes, let's bathe in a serenity prayer. I prefer that to what Lucy McBride is complaining about. She's called it a parallel pandemic of mental health in crisis because we're bathing in fear. Well, who's the Mr. Bubble of bathing in fear? It used to be Brian Stelter. It used to be CNN. Suddenly now they've all said, well, we're going too far on the COVID thing. Now, obviously, it is different now. We do have vaccines now. we've got boosters now. We're developing, you know, things all the time. There's monoclonal antibodies. There's the Omicron variant isn't as severe. It's awfully infectious, but not as severe. So there are reasons for optimism, but you kind of think that the scientific reasons aren't really the reasons that CNN's having such a turnaround. I mean, Stelter's on the air now using the words panic porn. What? It's like he overnight he turned into Ben Shapiro. He sounds like conservative Twitter. He sounds like Curtis Houck and Nick Fondacaro. I just got a kick out of him announcing he was going to ask Oliver Darcy an overbroad question.
Here's a big, overly broad question for you, okay? Is the media at this point out of touch with the public about COVID?
I think it's hard to argue that, you know, the media is a large group of people, but a lot of the media does seem, when I look at it and then travel the country, to be very out of touch with people. I mean, if you travel the country, people are not really living in the same bubble that it seems that most of the media is messaging toward. And, right. And so I think this is an issue because if people are tuning out what's going on in cable news, if we're not messaging toward the general population, you know, they're just, you know, ignoring everything and living their lives. And we're not really getting the information that they need to them.
Oh, now there's a bubble. Now there's a media bubble. Oh, did you know this, that the media were in a bubble outside the American people on COVID? Yes, that used to be the bubble of sense against the anti-vaxxer nonsense. Well, again, they never wanted to acknowledge that you could be pro-vaccine and anti-panic porn. Suddenly now, the nuance has arrived. You could do this thing where you want to say, well, congratulations for arriving at logic. But, you know, do you really want to give them that much credit? You know, Fondacaro had this in his blog. He said, Stelter went on to say, suddenly the CDC has become a literal punchline. They're experiencing a huge credibility crisis. Rochelle Walensky is undergoing media training. Well, you know what that's about. That's about when they ask you a question you don't like, you learn how to skillfully not answer it. That's the training she's undergoing. Then in the Reliably Liberal, Reliable Sources newsletter, there came the headline, for media, COVID alarm is a hard habit to break. Now, I'm a nut for the band Chicago, so this, of course, makes me go right back to Chicago 17. I'm a dude. They were addicted to something. Yes, this was a piece at The Hill by a guy named Joe Ferrullo, you know, a former TV news producer for the liberal media networks. Ferrullo wrote, overheated language in print and on cable demands readers and viewers treat the epidemic as if it were 18 months ago before vaccines, boosters, and a new, less deadly strain. Okay, Joe. I'm with you on that. Yes, dial down the panic porn. We're getting to a point where Stelter and the Newsbusters are coming to agreement. Dogs and cats lying down together. Complete panic. But there's been a whole strain of these. Suddenly, the liberal media is discovering COVID skepticism. For example, CNN just wondered, can weight loss help protect against COVID? Huh. Jen Christensen wrote, people who are overweight or obese are at a much higher risk of more severe disease and even death from COVID. One new study suggests losing weight can reduce your COVID risk. Huh. Interesting. Isn't that what everybody else was saying in 2020? That's basically the Joe Rogan spin. They made fun of Joe Rogan. I mean, you know how much Stelter and Darcy hate Joe Rogan. Well, this is the whole line. The less fat you are, the less you're at risk. Especially that sort of morbidly obese, my 600-pound life thing. But I mean, look, some of us who are a little overweight definitely took that seriously, that's one of the things that you feel more at risk. Then there's stuff that doesn't apply to me. There's incidents of younger women going into menopause after being vaccinated. This used to be something you could not say. Now NPR's reporting on how COVID vaccines may briefly change your menstrual cycle. They don't want to overdo it. CNN had a piece trying to dial it down. And that may not be a reason to avoid the vaccine, but obviously women of childbearing age are concerned about the idea that, hey, I don't want these vaccines to get in the way of my fertility. So again, if you have reasons to be skeptical or slow, they're now acceptable, but it used to be kooky. Suddenly the kooky's just melting away. Then there's this idea of being hospitalized with COVID instead of for COVID. Oh, does that sound familiar? That's something that the conservatives have basically been saying since the beginning. And now suddenly, now the news media and the CDC are going, there's a difference between hospitalized with COVID and hospitalized for COVID. One hospital executive publicized how 2/3 of all COVID admissions were for other reasons. An editor highlighted in New York City, there are more hospitalized with COVID than because of COVID. Oh, fascinating. Well, here again, you want to play this whole game of thank you for arriving at common sense. You know, I'm just not interested in that. And I don't want to basically like dunk it in their face either, but let's have some humility. This is one of our problems with the news media is the arrogance, because again, what did they say they represented? We represent the science. You people, you represented kookball, horse dewormer solutions. No. Now, what they used to say was, well, we represent the science. And you represent kooky horse dewormer solutions. No, again, you could be skeptical of the COVID consensus without going full kook. But they never want to acknowledge that. Just like you can be a sensible conservative and not a Trump won in a landslide kook. But they don't want to acknowledge there's any difference. Because they're liberals, and that's what they want. And they say they're the people who believe in nuance. Now, back to the other side of COVID panic porn, let's look at Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. Did you hear about this? From the bench, the arguments on Friday over a vaccine mandate. Sotomayor claimed we have over 100,000 children with COVID, which we've never had before in serious condition, and many on ventilators. Oh, okay. Tens of thousands of children on ventilators. Where was the news coverage of that? I don't think Lester Holt would have missed that. Guess what? They didn't really want to announce she got it wrong. Now, there's a few people, the fact checkers discovered this. The Glenn Kessler discovered this. The New York Times did not discover this. Clay Waters noted. The New York Times had a whole piece, 1,500-word piece, on the vaccine mandate arguments at the court. No mention of Sotomayor. So she said, once again, we have over 100,000 children in serious condition. As Clay said, that's not even close to factual. The average 7-day average figure of under 18-year-olds hospitalized with COVID is currently under 800. Sotomayor also stated falsely that Omicron is as deadly and causes as much serious disease in the unvaccinated as Delta did. Also wrong. So where was the fact checker at the New York Times, Linda Qiu, Q-I-U. Maybe she was exhausted from a long series of January 6 misinformation checks. They worked her hard all day January 6. But even Hsu's previous employer, PolitiFact, which hates fact-checking liberals, was compelled to give her a false. Not a pants on fire rating, just a false. Now, this is one of those areas where you say, yeah, there's a lot of emotion in PolitiFact's so-called truthometer. Because when it comes to that rating, pants on fire, they're much more likely to give that to conservatives or Republicans. They're much more likely to give that to social media pages that say anti-vax stuff. And, you know, liberals don't get pants on fire, you know, barely at all. So Sotomayor can say something that's this far off, that there's 100,000 children seriously ill with COVID and many of them on ventilators, and that she doesn't get pants on fire. And what they would say is, the pants on fire rating is about a malicious intentional lie. And when liberals are extremely wrong, well, we obviously assume that they didn't mean it. Glenn Kessler at least gave it 4 Pinocchios. You know, this reminds me. Did you see this thing about Tom Cotton? Tom Cotton last March was making a big deal about how the way the Democrats were writing COVID relief checks, they were going to send them to prisoners. So he said, he tweeted, Dylann Roof murdered 9 people. He's on federal death row. He'll be getting a $1,400 stimulus check as part of the Democrats' COVID relief bill. Glenn Kessler fact-checked this. What? Now, Cotton may be cute here, but he's predicting. He's basically implying that when you provide COVID relief benefits to prisoners, one would presume that they probably won't make distinctions between small violators and heinous criminals. That was kind of the point he was making. But Kessler wrote a fact check with the title, Hyped Up Claims About Who's Getting Stimulus Checks. Well, now it's turned out we've discovered Joe Carr of the Hill People's Arnaev. You know, the Rolling Stone cover boy who killed 3 people at the Boston Marathon and knocked off a bunch of people's legs. He actually received a $1,400 stimulus check. And Kessler had to backtrack. At least he did it publicly. Well, he did it kind of in a weeny way, though. It was sort of like, well, I'm keeping 1 Pinocchio because I didn't like your context. How about we give you a couple of Pinocchios, Glenn? Don't fact check predictions, even cutesy ones. Predictions aren't facts. Now, you can make mendacious-sounding predictions like Joe Biden's going to be completely insane by the end of 2022. Senile, I mean, you know, that's not in good faith. But he just presumed Tom Cotton, you know, I've got to fact-check Tom Cotton's political tweets. This is not something Glenn Kessler's going to do for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right? It's just, it's all about the, and this is, I think we all can smell this. This is the way it works. Tom Cotton might run for president. Ted Cruz might run for president again. Ron DeSantis definitely running for president. And they look this at this and they say, oh, we got to stop these guys. We got to fact check these guys. We got to ding them up a little. You know, this is the way that even PolitiFact, you can see when people are gesturing about running for president, they get a little more attention from the fact checkers. Now, this doesn't always work for the Democrats. I mean, Kamala Harris on January 6th gives a speech. She compares January 6th to Pearl Harbor 9/11. And we say, let's guess the fact checkers are going to give that the day off. I literally tweeted, you know, this is drowning in hyperbole, but the fact checkers aren't going to snag Kamala Harris on this. It's wild exaggeration. And it implies that somehow the death toll on January 6th was hundreds of people, which it most obviously was not. So imagine I go traipsing around Snopes.com. And guess what? I was amazed. I hate to be surprised at these fact-checking websites. I'm usually not. And of course, a lot of the Snopes fact-checking is all this goofball clickbait about whether the antelope is actually has furry horns or something that nobody cares about, but they think it'll click. And they actually had a fact check, not of Kamala Harris. No, no. They were fact checking radio host Todd Starnes, the former Fox News employee. Todd Starnes basically said that Kamala Harris said that January 6th was worse than 9/11. That's not precisely what she said. That is exactly what Matthew Dowd said. He said 1/6 is worse than 9/11. Fact checker said. So, yes, Snopes.com fact checked somebody because Kamala Harris didn't say 1/6 was worse than 9/11. She said 1/6 was like 9/11. I mean, this is just shows you these people are not here to fact check both sides. They're here to be a secret service, a factual secret service for Biden and Harris. That's the way it looks. Snopes hack Dan McGill writes, though some observers might object to Harris's even mentioning the Capitol attack in the same breath as Pearl Harbor. You missed an L, Dan. It is simply inaccurate to claim that she said or even implied that January 6th was by some unspecified measure worse than those two earlier infamous days. She did not, and we are issuing a rating of mostly false. I mean, Snopes. This is a reason I call them the dopes at Snopes. I mean, they just don't have enough self-respect. A lot of these fact checks, it's about deciding what to check. And they can do fact checks that are reasonable and say, yes, it's true. You know, this and that. I'll find they can fact check conservatives in a way that we would say, yes, you are right. And they were wrong. But so much of this, it's so partisan. And it's so much spin control. Speaking of January 6th, then we turn to the Energizer Bunny, Curtis Houck, who spent a lot of time counting up just how many minutes CNN and MSNBC spent on January 6th coverage on January 6th. Just how obsessed would it be? It's a whopper. Curtis says the total clocking in at 1,653 minutes and 2 seconds on the two networks. That means 27 hours, 33 minutes, and 2 seconds. 27 and a half minutes out of 48. And of course, that's deducting all the commercials. MSNBC's 838 and a half minutes surprisingly trounced CNN, which had 814 and a half minutes. This only underlines our point. They don't believe that you can overdo 1/6. You may only underdo. You cannot overdo. Curtis then went on to note, 7 of CNN's 12 shows did offer a segment or two or a brief that talked about something other than January 6th. But 4 of those were before noon Eastern on January 6th. So, I mean, there was hours and hours where January 6th was the only topic. MSNBC wasn't any better, as only 5 out of 16 shows featured something other than the riot. One of those, in the 9 p.m. Eastern hour, Rachel Maddow took time out. She used 68 seconds in the final few minutes to update viewers on the fire at a Planned Parenthood clinic in Tennessee. Because as we all know, the only thing that's more important than a deadly riot is the right to abort. Okay. So what happened then in the ratings? Curtis had that too. The Fox News Channel cruised to an easy victory on January 6th in both total viewers and the demo, 1.567 million total viewers and 245,000 in the prized 25 to 54 demographic. Fox News defeated CNN in every hour across both categories. CNN was about halvesies of the Fox News audience, 742,000 total viewers and 139,000 across Thursday in the demo. MSNBC got over a million viewers overall, but narrowly lost to CNN among 25 to 54. Now, you could joke, you could say, well, Fox had twice as much as CNN, which was a good day for CNN, because usually Fox has a 3-to-1 advantage on CNN. You know, if CNN really wanted to rival Fox, they could take this new Stelter Darcy thing against panic porn on COVID. Yeah, maybe make some sense on COVID. See if that helps your ratings. You know, it is amazing that CNN hates Fox this much, and everybody knows that part of the reason for that is that they just get trounced by Fox. But there's another reason, and that is, and you can sense this in sort of the typical Stelter Darcy answer to things, and that is they think that America's best guided, everybody's most sensible, when they listen to CNN, really listen to CNN, and believe everything they say. When people listen to Fox instead, there's something dangerously wrong with our democracy. And we're going to see this. We see this all over as 2022 goes on. We've got these sickos now basically suggesting if the Republicans are ahead in the polls, this means democracy is falling apart. You can't vote for Republicans. It doesn't matter if inflation is through the roof. It doesn't matter if you can't find your tortillas at the grocery store. It doesn't matter if Omicron rages. It doesn't matter if Biden's giving in to Russia on pipelines. None of it matters. You don't have any reason on any issue to vote Republican, because clearly if you vote Republican, you hate democracy. If you don't like this spin, then it just might be that you are the right kind of consumer for Newsbusters. Keep up with what's going on. Come on by. Once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.